A lot of people talk about this culture ad, and typically that speaks to company culture, but I think especially, you know, coming from a Mexican background, it also means your actual culture and your actual heritage, because everyone has something unique to bring to the table. And it's hard because I will say normally companies do expect you to change and they have a preference on how you would like to be.
Welcome to Latinx in Power, a podcast hosted by Thaisa Fernandes.
Welcome to Latinx in Power. In today's episode, we are talking with Cynthia Orduña. She's a career coach and talent development advisor. Cynthia has helped over 50 startups and coached over 300 people in all stages of their career, from entry to senior levels. Welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I'm so excited that it's a Friday and I'm excited to be talking to you too.
Perfect. I also so excited about this episode because I really wanted to bring the perspective of someone with the background in recruiting, career development, diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I'm super happy to talk more about that.
Yeah, all the things. It's like a lot of
all the important things. And this is the question I usually ask my guests. Yes, and I love all the answers I get. So what does it mean to be a Latina for you?
I really thought about this one, and I know that you asked every single person. And I know within the Latinx community, there are so many different types of cultures. But what I think is really universal are the values that you have as a Latina. So growing up, for me, I was taught that family is everything, and I still live with and take care of my grandparents. And I was also taught to be kind to everyone that I was meeting, or to be very generous, or to always feed people. You can never have someone in the house without feeding them. And there's always a ton of food for everyone. So to me, it's about being very loving and taking care of people. And my family has shown me time and time again that they're willing to make sacrifices in order for me to have a better life. So that's what it means for me to be a Latina. And I would say it's the values that I hold really closely.
That's beautiful. I can definitely relate to that. And the feeding part makes me laugh a lot. It's really interesting because we have the sense that we need to feed people. And I remember when I became vegan, it was a thing, right? Because I'm not able to eat anything that people give me. And sometimes they take it personally. And that's another thing that I think is interesting, especially if you go to someone's place, you need to repeat the food. If they give you something, you need to repeat. If you don't repeat, it kind of means you don't like it that much. I don't know if you have that too.
I mean, I would say in my grandmother's eyes, it's rude not to eat someone else's food. And I've also been trying to become or have more of a vegetarian diet. And both my grandparents have been like, that's ridiculous. Like, that's the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard, because our food has a lot of meat in it. You know, it's just part of the culture. So I definitely feel you on that one. But it's step by step, baby steps to getting there.
Totally. I love that. And tell us more about yourself and your journey.
Yeah. So I'm Mexican-American. My family on both my mom and my dad's side immigrated from Mexico. On my mom's side, I think I'm second generation. On my dad's side, I think I'm third or fourth generation. I'm not so sure as to who was the first person that came here. But my passion for social justice started early on. And just as a woman of color who also happens to look a lot younger, I've had a lot of instances of prejudice, discrimination, and microaggressions both in and out of the workplace. And I began looking into systems of inequality around 6 years ago when I started working in human resources. And what happened was, after I filled out the EEOC report for the company, I realized I was the only Latina working in the organization in a non-janitorial capacity, and that 80% of their employees were white. So from my experience in HR and tech recruiting, I started to realize more and more how there wasn't a lot of representation, and there wasn't anyone that I worked with that looked like me. So these are one of the many reasons that I've dedicated my career to uplifting diverse voices in the workforce by coaching on career development and advocacy and allyship. And that's really been my main focus for these past few years, has been helping on people from underrepresented communities grow in their careers, and also researching those inclusive work cultures.
Well, I'm glad we have people like you working on that. I really wanted to help to demystify the career coach profession in our community. I know that I'm always talking with my friends and colleagues, you need to get a career coach, and they are always like asking questions. And I think it would be super cool if you can share more about the work you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would love to hear if you have any questions of those as well. I can address them too if you want. So right now, I'm one of those people that probably does too much, and I'm sure that you can relate. So right now, I work full-time as a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant, and I have my career coaching practice on the side. So I started my coaching business a year ago, right before the pandemic hit. Because I worked in tech recruiting and I have a background in HR, it was really easy for me to help people and advise people in this way. But what really bugged me about career coaching, and still bugs me, is the fact that it's extremely expensive. So it can be anywhere from $100 to $300 a session, and that makes it inaccessible for people who may not have the money. But you also normally need multiple sessions, and that's not always feasible. So I started my practice at $30 to $50 a session in order to make it more equitable. And what I do essentially is coach people on everything from interviews to resumes to networking to their personal branding to creating a portfolio or even starting their own business. And I specifically focus on tech career paths and creative career paths.
Amazing. And I think it is interesting what you said. I think people sometimes they have this idea, oh, I need a career coach when I have a problem. A problem being I want to switch jobs or I want to change my career, but not exactly, right? Sometimes you just want to create a plan, 5-year plan, or sometimes you just want to improve something or brainstorm what is your next step, right?
Yeah, I think you could go to a career coach for anything. You know, it can be anything from kind of like you just said, do I want to switch jobs? Do I feel like leaving my boss and my job? Am I looking to go into a different industry? And I would say going to a career coach whenever you do have a question about your career is helpful. But ideally, I would say once you know more or less what direction you want to go would be the better time to go to a career coach. So I would say an example is, let's just say you do want to switch jobs and you want to switch industries. Well, okay, can I reach out to people in my network to start hopping on informational interviews just to learn about what is the new industry that I want to go into? What is this new role that I want to learn? And even get a sense if that's really the direction that I want to take. And once you've talked to people and gathered an idea of what your next step is, even if you don't have all the answers, that's when it makes the most sense, I think, to go to a career coach, because you already know what your goal is, and that person can help you create the action plan to get to your goal. It's not that you can't go to a career coach ahead of time. I just think in terms of, again, the investment that it is, it would probably make more sense to utilize it once you know what that goal is.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Amazing tip. Thinking about the pandemic and everything being remote right now, how do you feel about it?
I personally love the remote part of the pandemic. I do know that last year it was very hard because unemployment rate was at an all-time high, specifically within the United States. And, you know, a lot of people were losing their jobs. A lot of people didn't know what they were going to do next. And it was harder to get a job because a lot of companies stopped hiring or they put a freeze on their hiring. So for me last year, I worked with a lot of people to help them get jobs during the pandemic. And what I've found was, one, even if you're still on the job search right now, it is not impossible to get another job. There are tons of companies that are hiring and there are tons of industries that actually boomed because of the pandemic. So there are tons of jobs that are opening up. And then the second thing is the remote aspect of the pandemic also helped people because you're now not limited to the location that you're in, because you can apply to jobs that may be outside of Los Angeles. You can apply to jobs that are outside of New York. And a lot of people are also hiring globally. So I think in that sense, it actually opened up more opportunities for people versus limiting them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a really good point, which forced a lot of people, a lot of companies be more open-minded about remote workers. So this is definitely a really good point. Talking about folks who are looking for a job right now or thinking about switching jobs, what are the tips you want to share with them?
So if it is the same role, but first thing is getting all of your career stuff together. So your resume, have you updated your resume with your most recent job? More often than not, people get a new job. They do all of these amazing things. They don't document it. Whether you get laid off or you're leaving the role, you didn't add it to your resume. So adding that to your resume, adding that experience, adding that to your LinkedIn, and also making sure that your LinkedIn is updated and that your LinkedIn says that you're open to work, that you're looking for a specific position so that people online can find you, specifically recruiters who are looking for your position, and making sure that you get your list of referrals. So who are the people that you've worked with, whether it's management, a colleague that would be happy to give you a referral the next time you're interviewing for a job. And also getting organized with the list of companies that you're thinking about working for. So, okay, I want to get into this next position. Maybe I'm a customer success manager. So where are all the companies where I would love to be a CSM? And then who are all the people that I would love to speak to in those companies? Is it someone that's also in a CSM role so I can get a little bit more of an understanding? Or is it a manager of, you know, the customer success department? Or is it the recruiter that you want to reach out to? Make a list of a few people from each company that you want to speak to, because more likely than not, some people don't end up responding. And start networking. Right now, your network is the easiest way to land that first interview. So start reaching out to those people, hopping on informational interviews, learning more about the companies that you want to work for, learning more about the roles, and getting all of that organized. Because once you have all of that, if someone were to say, you know what, this position just popped up, send me your resume, I'm going to introduce you to the recruiter. You want to make sure that you have that ready and you're not rushing like, oh my gosh, I took two steps forward and then I realized that I don't even have my resume updated, you know, for this position.
Mm-hmm. I love what you said about the references, because this is not something I think we usually think. We just think when we need it, and it might be not the right timing because you might not be able to contact the person you thought about. So yeah, that was really good. And I think also the list of the companies and industries you want to be part of, I think it's really nice because it's also kind of like a way to brainstorm where you want to be. So yeah, this exercise, it's super amazing. I did that last time before I joined Twitter, and it was really nice to kind of like brainstorm where I really want to be and why. And this is the list. I'm going to check this list, because I think sometimes it's easy to feel overwhelmed. And sometimes on LinkedIn, it's super easy to apply. You basically just apply. Sometimes you don't think that much where you want to be, which company, which product you want to be part of. So it's a really nice tip.
Yeah. And I like how you mentioned referrals as well, or you touched on it, because I've even had experiences with friends where they have given a referral and the referral actually didn't even end up being very beneficial to them, ended up causing them to not get the job. So with the referrals, I would say, yes, always keep people top of mind. But at the same time, I would double check with someone to say, hey, I would love to put you down as a referral as I'm looking for my next role. Is that something that you would feel comfortable with? And really have a conversation with them of how they may be portraying you, because you don't want to give a referral from someone you think may shine you in a good light, end up having the opposite happen.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense, especially if it is someone that you worked a long time and maybe the person don't remember that much about you because you're not in contact, right? And they're like, oh, okay, this is gold. I love that. I also wanted to talk more about rejections, since this is a difficult part of the job search. What are the tools people can use to help them overcome rejections? How can they maintain a good mental state during this like job search process? I think maintaining this good mental state, it might be the most challenging part, right? Especially after some rejections or after one rejection that you really liked. So how can we do that?
Yeah, it is hard. I would say it's the hardest part of the job search process. I've heard so many people tell me how they've become depressed from looking for a job. You know, depending on how long it takes you to look for a job, which on average, it takes a person around 6 months. But I've had so many people where it's taken 8 months or more. So when it comes to rejection, I think my first tip is always email them back and ask for feedback. You may not always get feedback, but it is good to ask every time you haven't made it to the next round, or if you made it to the last round and you weren't chosen. Because a lot of times you may have been absolutely amazing and it was a very small difference in why the other person got chosen. So when you have that insight, it's easier to feel like it's not because there's something wrong with you and you're not worth it. So allowing yourself to actually see if there's any feedback for you is going to take your mind away from all the things that we can make up about ourselves because we don't know the answer. And another thing, because we're talking about mental health, is to make sure that you're living your life holistically. So reward yourself with something small every day for putting in the work to look for a new job, because it is the most draining process and you deserve to enjoy life right now. So making sure that job search doesn't take over your life and treat it as if it were a job itself. So set up your schedule as if you're going to work. What time do you want to start? What time is lunch? What time is your day end? And utilize the time off to do things that make you happy and enjoy your weekends and anything that makes you feel good that takes away from your job search. Because if rejection and the job search starts to take over your life, then that's going to get to your head. And when you're making time to do other things and make yourself happy, you remember that you are more than a job. You are more than rejections, and you are a unique and amazing human being. So rejections don't define you if you don't let them. So I would say that's two things, is gain as much information as you can and also make sure that you're not allowing it to completely take over every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like what you said about treating the job search as a job that you need to do no matter what, because I understand that sometimes you had a rejection or some rejections and it's really hard to continue. It might be really hard to even continue to apply for jobs or doing interviews. So don't let this happen and treat as a job that you need to do like no matter what, right? So that is an interesting tip. I like that too.
Yeah. And the fun part is too, you can make your own schedule this time. So if you decided you don't want to wake up until 10 o'clock, you don't have to wake up until 10 o'clock. And you can create an entirely different schedule. If you want to take a 3-hour lunch, right? I think it's really emphasizing what schedule works for you. What can you do to also enjoy this time? Because a lot of times when we're working full time, our schedules are very rigid. And we have an opportunity here where, yes, we are stressed out and we are looking for this new role, but we can also utilize that time for ourselves too.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And I saw your video about how men can support women in tech. I absolutely love that. So I love if you can talk more about it and what you share in this video.
Yes. So I created a video a few months ago about giving tips to men on how they can support women in tech. And I created this video because when I was working in tech, I remember not really knowing how bad the lack of representation was until I went to a sales networking event where I was one of two women in a room of 30 plus men. And that experience was extremely uncomfortable for me. I wanted to leave the minute that I got there, but it started to get me thinking deeper into what happens with women. And normally women are told how they should act in order to fit in with men or to grow into a leadership position, especially in tech. And as an industry, tech tries to make women mold themselves into something they're not. And that's not what true inclusion or belonging is. So I kind of had this message of we need to stop forcing people to change and work harder just to be noticed, and instead look within ourselves to see everyone equally and embrace different styles and personalities. And so that's why I made a video specifically to give men tips on how to support women, since I feel the opposite happens a lot in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like what you said about this idea that people need to change, and especially people of color, Latinx, immigrants, immigrants, refugees, because we understand that sometimes there are some differences, cultural differences, and sometimes we might think, oh, we are the wrong ones, or we see feedback telling that we need to change, but not necessarily, right? I like this idea right now, especially since I have been living in the US for 7 years. I learned a lot about the American culture, so I try to add what I think is interesting to my culture too, you know, like combining those two, not the sense that I need to change because I'm wrong, the way I think, the way I do things is wrong. No, I can add and I can be myself, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of people talk about this culture add, and typically that speaks to company culture. But I think especially, you know, coming from a Mexican background, it also means your actual culture and your actual heritage, because everyone has something unique to bring to the table. And it's hard because I will say normally companies do expect you to change and they have a preference on how you would like to be. But instead, the work that I try to do is, okay, well, let me challenge your culture in general as to why you even perceive that to be the best way to do something. Because we're only as diverse or representative of the people creating the products. Right. And I mean, similar to, I think, Twitter, like you can only be as inclusive as the amount of different types of people that you have. So I think it's always good to push against the status quo. But I will say that I think right now I'm in a privileged position to be able to challenge. And I do understand that not everybody has the opportunity to do that right now. So I just try to do my part in advocacy for the moment.
Yeah, and this just like reinforced the importance of not just occupying the spaces, but opening the doors for others, holding space for others, right? And how can men support women in tech?
Well, I think there's a few things. One of them is noticing microaggressions that may happen in the workplace. So an example of microaggressions that men may do is, one, asking the only woman in the conference room to take notes during a meeting, regardless of her position, even if it is a very high one. Another one could be when men interrupt and speak over women in meetings, or a similar one, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but when you say something and then you notice a couple minutes later a man says the exact same thing that you just said and gets credit for it. So one is acknowledging that this is a problem and that it's there, because you can't fix something if you don't know what it is. And then the second thing is taking additional steps to empower women's voices in the workplace. So something that men can do, if we speak to the meeting example, is if someone is cutting off another woman, I'll just call her Sarah for now, and they cut off Sarah, you can either do two things. You can cut off the guy and you say, hey, Jim, don't mean to cut you off, but I don't think that Sarah was done with her thoughts. Sarah, can you keep going? Or if you want to not cut off the person that just cut off someone else, you could also wait until they're done and say, hey, Jim, thanks for your, you know, contribution. Sarah, I believe you didn't get to share your thoughts. Can you continue telling us what you were going to say? So that's just a public way to give people a voice and show people that you're paying attention. Or in a meeting, if someone says the exact same thing as a woman 5 minutes later, you could say, oh, thank you, Jim, for emphasizing Sarah's point. Sarah, I think that that was a great idea and we should start with implementation. So I would say it's about publicly acknowledging these things in the workplace when you see them happen, because you've already acknowledged that they are there, and helping to advocate for people publicly and really give them the recognition that they deserve.
I love your examples, and it's something that especially men should do like right away, and a lot of people, they need to start doing. And as a really nice way to help the other person acknowledge them and continue to be kind and nice with the other person, they will probably get the message and think twice, I hope so, next time. And hopefully, slowly, we start to change things, right?
Mm-hmm. And it only takes one person to say something sometimes to actually have someone else be acknowledged and empowered. And oftentimes, what really sucks is is that if you decide to speak up for yourself, sometimes you're just seen as someone who is just, you know, taking it too personally. If I as a woman would say, hey, you know, I just said that. And that happened to me in a meeting once where I was speaking, someone else had the exact same thing, and I couldn't hold it in. And I was like, I just said that. And the entire room got silent. And the CEO did not know what to do. But oftentimes, it's just moved past. And someone else stepping in to say something and support you can make a big difference in the way in which that dynamic is going to play out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting too, because I feel a lot of people sometimes they think they need to do something really challenging, big and grandiose, and they don't do because they don't know how to do. But most of the time, what an ally can do is small things like that. If you saw someone like repeating the idea of another person, another woman, just give her a credit and just repeat. As you said, like, thank you for reinforcing what Cynthia said. So it's just like small things. It's not that hard, right?
It's not that hard. No. And I think it goes back to what people think allyship is. And like we're talking about right now, it's so simple and it can be baby steps that really make a large difference. You don't have to, you know, create like this giant presentation and, you know, do all of the things. It's really just about taking those small steps to become an ally, to educate yourself, and to advocate in those moments. But it doesn't take a giant parade or something extravagant for you to become an ally.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And what's your superpower?
So I've always said that my superpower and sometimes my downfall is empathy. And I'm the type of person, I will start crying if you start crying. Or if someone hurt you, I will get angry at that person for you. And I really absorb the energy of people around me. So sometimes it feels a little overwhelming when someone close to me is going through a hard time. But what I really think is beautiful about empathy is that it allows me to view different perspectives and connect with people, no matter their background or their life experience. And when I'm coaching, I'm able to get to know and connect with the person on the other side. And not only do we get to connect, but a lot of times people don't realize how amazing they are. And so I coach them on how to advocate for themselves and see their worth, because there's so much that everyone brings to the table based on their culture or their career or their life experiences. And we work together on how to tell your story in a way that gets other people to see that too.
That is beautiful. I can definitely feel that. We didn't know each other before this episode, and like as we are talking, we have been talking for a while. I feel super connected with you. I don't know.
Like I said, it's sometimes a downfall, definitely a downfall when, you know, I think you want to hold together your emotions. But at the same time, I think connecting with people is so much more powerful than the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. And our last question, I'm having a lot of fun, of course, with all the questions I'm asking. I'm learning a lot with this process, but also resources. Can you share with us which resource helped you in your journey? It can be a book, podcast, movie, someone inspiring that we should check, any quote?
Yeah. So I'm going to be honest, I'm energized by constantly learning and doing new things. So there is never a time when I'm not doing a million things at once. So I can't say that there's one specific resource that has changed my life, but I've gone to coaches for everything from career to manifestation to business to my finances. And I've bought books and listened to podcasts about everything from yoga to nutrition to social justice to history to confidence to art. So I think my biggest tip for people is to explore your passions even outside of your career and learn about yourself and your life holistically, and not to limit yourself to just one thing, but to really be free and let yourself go and dive deep into topics you have absolutely no knowledge on. Because I've found that a lot of times the random stuff that I think has nothing to do with what I'm working on transfers into so many different aspects of my life. So when it comes to resources, I would encourage people to explore and learn to enjoy going out of their comfort zone, whether it's working with coaches and advisors, mentors, or, you know, diving into books and podcasts that may have your interest, but you don't think is something that you should be putting your time towards.
Yeah, this is a really good mindset to have, especially because sometimes people might think, oh, I want to learn more about ceramics. Am I like creating my own store to sell my ceramics? Maybe not. Maybe you just don't want to do ceramics, and that's okay. You don't need to make this your life, right? It's just something that you like to do. And I think it's really interesting having this mindset.
Yeah, and I love that you brought up ceramics too. I haven't tried it. I do want to try it once we can actually go to a class. But a way, you know, maybe in which ceramics can also transfer is ceramics getting you out of your comfort zone? Is it, you know, maybe helping your hands get a break from the typing that you do all day? Or is there a specific way in which they teach ceramics, whether it's about thinking about what you're going to create, that can help you think about a business problem next time you brought something up at work? So there are so many different aspects of, you know, something that sounds like it has nothing to do with your life, when art often transfers over into every aspect of business and is just a different way of thinking about things. So even that, I would say, could help you and support you in other areas.
I totally encourage.
I mean, that's all I can say. Like, I just in this year, I've probably tried out at least like 15 things. So that's why I say nothing comes out. And there's no one thing that really comes to mind. And sometimes maybe it's not even weekly. Sometimes maybe it only takes your attention for one day, but that's okay too. You don't have to stick to everything, you know, just allow yourself to explore.
Yes, 100 times for that. And I wanted to finalize this episode with a quote that I saw in your LinkedIn, and I thought it was so beautiful. So I wanted to say it is a quote by David Viscott, and it says, "The purpose of your life is to discover your gift. The work of your life is to develop. The meaning of life is to give it away." That was so beautiful.
Yeah, I really loved it. And that's why I put it on my LinkedIn, because I felt it really relates to the type of work that I do, because I do love, you know, growing and developing and doing new things, like I said. But at the same time, I love teaching people how to do it and coaching people on how to do things as well and find their own beauty and their own story. And so for me, that just really related to my work in everything, I guess, in DEI and coaching and talent development, and really just all the things that I love to do.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Cynthia. I love that. I learned a lot. I want to leave the last minutes for you to share anything you want to share, and also share where people can find you, your social media channels too.
Yes. So thank you so much for having me on this podcast. It has been a blast. And in terms of people wanting to reach out, if they're interested in coaching sessions, they can book a call with me on my website at orduña.com. Or if you'd like in-depth career insights about interviewing, navigating the job search successfully, negotiation, salary, or more, you can subscribe to my YouTube channel or follow me on LinkedIn. And both of those are just my name, Cynthia Orduña. And yes, the NA is there, so you can copy and paste, because I know sometimes it's hard to do it on your keyboard.
Yeah. And we are going to link where people can find you in the description of this episode, so people can easily find it. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having me. And like I said, it was amazing.
That's it for today, everyone. Thank you so much. I learned a lot. And if you want to share with us what you learned with this episode in any social media channel that you follow us, and I would love to hear your thoughts in our next episode. I'm bringing a friend. We both work at Twitter, and I'm super excited about this episode too. And see you soon.